Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram from Friday, March 15th, 2024. Section A, State and Local News. Felon sought in Midland County manhunt by B.K. Richter. The Midland County Sheriff's Office identified the suspect in a manhunt that began Wednesday as 26-year-old Job Hasso. Hasso has multiple warrants out for his arrest. According to MCSO records, Hasso has several third-degree felony warrants for his arrest and one misdemeanor warrant. The felony warrants include the possession of a controlled substance, evading arrest or detention with a vehicle, continuous violence against family, and criminal mischief, a state jail felony. The misdemeanor warrant is for the possession of marijuana. Hasso is accused of leading law enforcement officers on a chase in Midland County beginning Wednesday. As of Thursday evening, he was still considered to be a wanted fugitive. Officers from the Midland County Sheriff's Office, the Ector County Sheriff's Office, and state troopers from the Texas Department of Public Safety all joined the manhunt Wednesday to attempt to locate Hasso after a vehicle chase escalated into a foot chase. Law enforcement agencies were on West Industrial Avenue, directly across from the flight line of the Midland International Air and Spaceport. Sergeant Stephen Blanco, a spokesperson for the Texas Department of Public Safety, said Wednesday that traffic had been diverted within that area due to law enforcement efforts related to the search for Hasso. According to Blanco, the Midland County Sheriff's Office was conducting a manhunt for Hasso while Texas DPS troopers continued to hold a perimeter around the area while that search was ongoing. This is not an active shooter situation as previously reported by the media, Blanco told the Reporter Telegram on Wednesday. Law enforcement agencies also used drones to help engage in the search for Hasso. According to other media reports, nearby businesses located near the Midland Airport were evacuated as of Wednesday, in addition to roads being closed, causing a delay for residents who were driving in the area. The public is being asked to call the Midland County Sheriff's Office at 432-688-4600 if they have any information about the location of Hasso. Barricaded suspect holds hostages, two adults and a child captive at Sundance Creek Apartments by Scott Nunn and Ben Schaefer. A barricaded subject held two adults and a child captive and police at bay at Building 8 at Sundance Creek Apartments Thursday. Midland Police Deputy Chief Brian Rackow said Thursday that a man was barricaded inside of an apartment holding two adult females and a child hostage. Midland police were conducting a welfare check Wednesday night at the apartment when they discovered the situation. Around 4 p.m. Thursday, Rackow said the subject had been communicating with law enforcement negotiators since the beginning of the situation. Building 8 of the apartment was evacuated. It was unknown how many residents were displaced because of the situation. Rackow said the city will assist displaced residents by working with local hotels and motels. Sundance Creek staff are crafting the list of displaced residents. Rackow said the law enforcement began evacuating Building 8 Wednesday night when they became aware of a hostage situation that was unfolding. Rackow said the Department of Public Safety had taken the lead on the situation Thursday. He said it was because MPD officers were on the scene too long and it can be detrimental to an officer's health for one unit to remain on duty for extended periods of time. The city alerted the media and the community of the situation at 9:45 a.m. Thursday, stating that the subject had barricaded themselves inside the apartment with a hostage. However, the alert was brief and initially left the community speculating on the situation. Early on, some residents wondered if the barricaded suspect was the same one who was involved in a county manhunt Wednesday. However, the Reporter-Telegram was able to clarify with MPD that the two situations were not related. MPD also stated there were no threats to the general public. While the initial alert to the media and community was sent out Thursday morning, some residents in the community were aware of the situation much earlier. According to citizen reports, the police presence had been there since Wednesday. Residents of the apartment complex received an email from management informing them of the situation. In an effort to keep you informed of activity within our community, we want to make all residents aware of an ongoing incident at our community regarding heavy police presence, part of the email read. Our residents' safety and well-being are our top priority, and Midland PD has strongly advised all residents to stay indoors and secure themselves until further notice. Please remain in your homes and avoid going outside for the time being. A subsequent email was sent to residents Thursday advising them they could leave the complex for work, etc. Please head to your vehicle quickly and be mindful of police department direction if they are in your area, the second email read. Our leasing office will be closed until given the clearance from Midland PD, but we will be working emails remotely. Residents in other buildings were allowed to come and go from the facility as they pleased. However, they were asked to park in a designated area. A photo submitted to the Reporter-Telegram shows police in full tactical gear, a mobile command unit, and a Texas Department of Public Safety Bearcat on scene. The hostage situation was ongoing as of press time. MPD, the Federal Bureau of Investigations, Odessa PD, and the Department of Public Safety came together to respond to the situation. MPD had no comment on the ongoing investigation. South Central District Conference returns to Bush Convention Center by B. K. Richter. The National Association of Negro Business and Professional Women's Club, Incorporated, plans to host the 61st South Central District Conference in Midland Friday through Sunday. The opening program and reception begins at 6 p.m. Friday at the Bush Convention Center, and the conference will conclude at noon on Sunday. Ollie Gilstrap, the governor of the South Central District of the NANBPWC, said the conference is an annual event that brings together clubs from Arkansas, Kansas, Louisiana, Missouri, New Mexico, and Texas. It is an opportunity for members to come together and celebrate our shared mission of strengthening the community through community service in the areas of leadership, entrepreneurship, technology, and service, Gilstrap wrote in an email message to the Reporter-Telegram. She also shared that more than 150 attendees are expected to attend the conference, including the youth and men's auxiliary groups. The theme of this year's conference is Igniting Engagement, and we have designed the conference to help members do just that with the goal of leaving feeling inspired, motivated, and empowered to take on new challenges and opportunities, Gilstrap wrote. Dr. Terry O'Neill Ford, the 25th National President of the NANBPWC Incorporated, said the theme of this year's conference in Midland perfectly encapsulates the spirit of progress and determination that has always been the hallmark of the South Central District. It resonates deeply with our national theme, moving forward with a purpose, exceeding the vision, breaking barriers, and empowering change, Ford wrote in a press statement discussing the conference. The array of workshops for adults, the enriching youth activities, including the rites of passage, the awarding of the district scholarships, the essential ombudsman activities, and the culminating Dr. Versia L. Lacey Prayer Breakfast Memorial Service all speak to the comprehensive and inclusive programming that has been thoughtfully curated for this gathering, she explained. The components of the conference are intended to highlight the group's commitment to fostering a sense of community and spiritual well-being among members, she added. Mrs. Shirley Howard, the president of the Midland chapter of the Negro Business and Professional Women's Club, shared the sentiment of the conference serving to foster community. The mission of our local chapter is to promote and protect the interests of African American business and professional women, she explained. We serve as a bridge for young people seeking to enter business and the professions, to improve the quality of life within local and global communities, and to foster good fellowship. Pornhub disables website in Texas over objection to age verification law. By Taylor Goldenstein, Austin Bureau. One of the most visited pornography websites, Pornhub, disabled its site in Texas on Thursday over objections to a state law that requires age verification to prevent access to minors. People who go to the site are now greeted with a long message from the company railing against the legal change as ineffective, haphazard, and dangerous. The company calls for age verification by the makers of devices that let people on the internet instead of individual websites. Until the real solution is offered, we have made the difficult decision to completely disable access to our website in Texas, the message read. The Republican-majority state legislature passed the age verification law, House Bill 1181, last year. It requires companies that distribute sexual material harmful to minors to confirm visitors are over 18 with an online system that verifies users' government-issued identification or another commercially available system that uses public or private data. The sites are not permitted to retain identifying information. Last month, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton sued the company that owns Pornhub to force compliance with the state's age verification law and threatened millions of dollars in civil penalties. Texas has the right to protect its children from the detrimental effects of pornographic content, Paxton said in a statement when he filed the suit. I look forward to holding any company accountable that violates our age verification laws intended to prevent minors from being exposed to harmful, obscene material on the internet. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in November of last year upheld the law, which carries fines of up to $10,000 a day, an additional $10,000 per day if the company illegally retains identifying information, and $250,000 if one or more children are exposed to explicit content due to the violation. Paxton's office did not immediately respond to a request for comment Thursday. A representative of Pornhub confirmed the website was down, but did not elaborate on whether the takedown is permanent or temporary. The company, in its note, raised concerns that the law was passed without any means to enforce at scale, which would drive users to websites with far fewer safety measures in place, which do not comply with the law. The only effective solution, the company writes, would be putting the age verification onus on the manufacturers and operating system providers of devices that have internet access, such as computer, tablet, and cell phone makers. That might look like a retailer verifying a person's age at the point of sale and installing content-blocking software if they are underage, the note says. The data would be stored on a network controlled by the device manufacturer or the supplier of the device's operating system. The Pornhub representative referred Hearst to a fact sheet laying out the company's concern that jurisdictions with site-level age verification are creating a high risk of data theft and privacy violation for people who will repeatedly have to input personally identifiable information. We call on all adult sites to comply with the law, the note reads. By disabling the site, the company said, we are complying with the law, as we always do, but hope that governments around the world will implement laws that actually protect the safety and security of users. The website is also down in at least 5 other states because of similar laws. Mississippi, Montana, North Carolina, Utah, and Virginia, according to PC Magazine. Uvalde Police Chief during Robb Elementary shooting resigns, by Acacia Coronado, Associated Press. The Uvalde police chief, who was on vacation during the Robb Elementary School shooting, submitted his resignation Tuesday, less than a week after a report ordered by the city defended the department's response to the attack, but outraged some family members of the 19 children and 2 teachers who were killed. Uvalde Police Chief Daniel Rodriguez was in Arizona when a teen entered a fourth-grade classroom in Uvalde with an AR-style rifle on May 24, 2022. In his resignation letter, which did not mention one of the deadliest school shootings in U.S. history, Rodriguez said it was time for a new chapter in his career. Together, we achieved significant progress and milestones, and I take pride in the positive impact we've made during my tenure, Rodriguez wrote. He also thanked colleagues and said Uvalde will always hold a special place in my heart. The resignation is effective April 6th. Rodriguez did not attend a Uvalde City Council meeting hours later, angering some families who continued to press for the city to take action against officers who responded to the shooting. The meeting was the first since a private investigator hired by the city unveiled a report that acknowledged missteps by police, but concluded that local officers did not deserve punishment. Nearly 400 law enforcement agents who were at the scene of the attack, including Uvalde police, waited more than an hour after the shooting began to confront the gunman. Mayor Cody Smith said it was too soon to take any action on the report. Some family members criticized Rodriguez's absence. What does Daniel do today? He doesn't show up, just like his crew didn't show up that day, said Jesse Risso, whose niece, Jacqueline Casares, was among the victims. A critical incident report by the Department of Justice in January found cascading failures in law enforcement's handling of the massacre. The report specifically mentioned Uvalde Police Lieutenant Mariano Parkas, who was the acting police chief that day in Rodriguez's absence. According to the almost 600-page DOJ report, nearly an hour after the shooter entered the school, Parkas continued to provide no direction, command, or control to personnel. The city's report agreed with that of federal officials regarding a lack of communication between officers' command and a response plan, as well as an insufficient officer training. Following the presentation of the findings last week, some speakers questioned why Rodriguez had allowed officers who had waited so long to act to remain on the force. A criminal investigation into the police response by Uvalde's district attorney, Christina Mitchell's office, remains ongoing. A grand jury was summoned earlier this year, and some law enforcement officials have already been called to testify. City officials have accused Mitchell of refusing to provide them with information from other responding law enforcement agencies, citing her office's ongoing investigation. In December 2022, city leaders sued the local prosecutor over access to records regarding the deadly shooting. Uvalde, a town of just over 15,000 residents, about 85 miles southwest of San Antonio, remains divided over accountability and the definition of moving forward. At least 5 officers who were on the scene have lost their jobs, including 2 Department of Public Safety officers and Pete Arredondo, the former school police chief who was the on-site commander. No officers have faced criminal charges. Gas prices climb 14 cents in Midland. by Ben Schaefer. Gas prices across the state and region increased as spring break travel gets underway, AAA Texas reported. The Texas state average is back up above $3 at $3.04 a gallon. Gas prices in Midland jumped 14 cents this week to $3.18. The statewide gas price average in Texas stayed below the $3 mark for more than 4 months until this week, stated Daniel Armbruster, spokesperson of AAA Texas. With spring break travel underway, there's more pressure on fuel demand, which could cause prices to increase further over the next week. Regionally, the gas price average in Abilene grew by 10 cents to $3.07. Gas prices in Amarillo grew 7 cents to $2.97. El Paso and Odessa experienced a 17 and 19 cent increase, respectively. Gas prices in San Angelo grew by 5 cents to $2.99. Although the state saw rising gas prices due to high fuel demand, 2022 remains the most expensive spring break gas price era, when the state average was around $4. This year, the state average is $3.04. Officials investigate second airplane tire incident in a week, Associated Press. Federal officials are investigating an incident in which an American Airlines plane flying from Dallas to Los Angeles suffered a tire problem just weeks after a United Airlines jetliner lost a tire during takeoff. The Federal Aviation Administration said Thursday that preliminary information indicated that American Flight 345 blew a tire during takeoff from Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, but said later the crew reported a flat tire. American said the pilots got a warning of low pressure in one of the tires. The Boeing 777 landed safely and taxied to the gate under its own power, American said. That model of plane has 14 tires to handle the pressure of takeoffs and landings, six on each of the two main landing gear assemblies and two more under the nose landing gear. The FAA is also investigating an incident last week in which a United Airlines Boeing 777 lost a tire during takeoff in San Francisco and cut short a flight to Japan, landing safely at Los Angeles International Airport. Both planes in the recent incidents are more than 20 years old. Texas ruling may hurt minority businesses, by Mirtha Donasterg, The Atlanta Journal-Constitution. It's a ruling reverberating across the country, even if the ramifications aren't yet clear. Last week, a district court judge in Texas ruled that a federal agency created to assist minority business owners could not use race as a deciding factor in whom to serve, essentially forcing it to open to white entrepreneurs. The Minority Business Development Agency, created in 1969, has offices across the country, including in Atlanta, which now must abide by the judge's decision unless it is appealed. Resources like help getting federal contracts, business consulting services, and access to grants and loans aimed at addressing opportunity gaps for minority businesses now must be available to businesses regardless of race. Many people see the MBDA court battle as part of a larger trend of lawsuits from conservative activists that aim to dismantle affirmative action in education and business. This is now at least the second federal agency in 9 months that has been ordered by a judge to change how they administer minority business programming. The MBDA is still exploring its options in the case, but in the meantime, the agency is continuing its work assisting businesses owned by socially or economically disadvantaged individuals in a manner consistent with the court's decision, Eric Morissette, acting Undersecretary of Commerce for Minority Business Development, said in an email statement. A spokesperson did not respond to follow-up questions. It's unclear how programs and grants would be affected. The leader of the institute that houses Georgia's MBDA said the organization would continue working to support business owners. How the case unfolded. In March 2023, three men, Jeffrey Nuziard, Christian Buckner, and Matthew Piper sued President Joe Biden, administration officials, and the MBDA, alleging agency offices in Texas, Florida, and Illinois refused to help them because they are white. In a 93-page ruling issued March 5th on the 55th anniversary of the MBDA's creation, Judge Mark Pittman acknowledged the MBDA benefits non-minorities as an economy is only as strong as its weakest link. But he wrote that was little comfort to plaintiffs when the agency wouldn't help them because of their skin color. The MBDA was established as an entity under the Commerce Department by President Richard Nixon in a 1969 executive order. It was then renewed by every president until 2021, when Congress and Biden enshrined it in law. The president has proposed $80 million for the agency in his fiscal year 2025 budget. The agency serves socially or economically disadvantaged individuals, which U.S. Code defines as, in part, as someone who has been subjected to racial or ethnic prejudice or cultural bias because of the identity of the individual as a member of a group. In deciding who is socially or economically disadvantaged, before this ruling, the MBDA presumed blacks, African Americans, Latinos, American Indians, Alaska Natives, Asians, Native Hawaiians, Pacific Islanders, and Hasidic Jews were disadvantaged. But Pittman, a Trump appointee, said that violates the Fifth Amendment right to equal protection. He issued a permanent injunction against the entire agency, using the presumption in determining who can receive help from their business center programs, essentially opening it up to all races and ethnicities. Damage to the soul of the country. The Georgia MBDA Business Center is housed at the Georgia Tech Enterprise Innovation Institute, the university's economic development arm, and has provided assistance for 20 years. Donna Enos, the Institute's Director of Community Engagement and Program Development, said the Georgia office has always helped everyone. We have a number of companies with all ethnicities call us, and we always make sure that we provide a service to them, even if it's just making sure that they're getting to the right resources, Enos said. This year, the Georgia's MBDA's budget is about $530,000, but now it's unclear how local resources and programs will be directed. The day after last week's ruling, Georgia MBDA officials had not received any guidance or information from the federal agency on how to move forward in light of the injunction. A Commerce Department spokesperson did not respond to follow-up questions from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution about any guidance since given to local offices. The MBDA also gives grants to universities and nonprofits across the nation for entrepreneur support and training programs. In 2022, Savannah State University received a $900,000 two-year grant to revamp their entrepreneurship minor. A spokesperson from the school said last week that the university had not received any notification of a change in funding. The agency has also partnered with the financial literacy nonprofit Operation Hope to help run its Enterprising Women of Color program in five cities, including Atlanta, where 375 women have been served. Operation Hope's CEO and founder, John Hope Bryant, told the AGC he doesn't think the ruling will change his organization's work, but he believes it impacts something deeper than resources. I think it damages the soul of the country, Bryant said. Legal wins and losses. The MBDA decision follows a similar ruling last summer against a U.S. Small Business Administration minority contracting program known as 8A, which barred the agency from presuming certain racial and ethnic groups were socially disadvantaged. In the wake of that ruling, the SBA now requires business owners fill out a questionnaire or write a narrative about being socially disadvantaged. In the weeks after that new requirement was put in place, the SBA reviewed or recertified thousands of current 8A participants, and it seems as if it's still business as usual, said Jennifer Pisley, project director of the Georgia MBDA Business Center. Atlanta-based venture capital firm Fearless Fund is another legal battlefield in this push against affirmative action. The firm was sued last summer, just weeks after the Supreme Court struck down race-based admissions practices at colleges and universities over a $20,000 grant program for black small business women. Practically every day, there seems to be a new legal ruling that chips away at our attempt to close economic gaps that exist for people of color, Ariane Simone, Fearless Fund CEO and co-founder, said in a statement. But Alfonso David, president and CEO of the Global Black Economic Forum and one of the lead lawyers for Fearless, said not all recent rulings have been wins for conservative activists. He noted that decisions from the Second Circuit Court and the 11th Circuit Court have been wins for advocates of diversity programs. Obituaries and death notices. Susan Elizabeth Henderson Askins. Susan Elizabeth Henderson Askins passed away peacefully at home in Midland, Texas on March 10, 2024. She was born July 26, 1944 in Longview, Texas to Elizabeth Ann Beth Henderson, while her father, Richard L. Henderson, was flying B-24 bombers and P-51 Mustang fighter planes over Germany during World War II. Susan is preceded in death by her father, Richard, and stepmother, Alma Jean Henderson, mother, Beth, and stepfather, Charles Pretty, brother, Rick Henderson, stepsister, June Jarrett, and stepbrothers, Bob Pretty and Charles Pretty, Jr. She is survived by her daughter, Kendall Smith, and sons, Mason Askins and Cooper Askins. She has three grandchildren and one great-grandson. She is also survived by her stepsister, Barbara Clark, stepsister Susan Jarrett, and stepbrother Walter Pretty. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Tuesday, March 19, 2024, at First Presbyterian Church in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle & Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Tony Goyoung. Tony Goyoung, 73, of Burleson, Texas, passed away March 8, 2024. Tony was born in Nigeria. He is survived by his wife, Cynthia, three sons, Tony Jr., Cliff, and Aaron, two daughters, Myra and Monica, and numerous siblings, Christiana, Jemima, Tani, Rebecca, Rita, Nanchen, Joy, Penwa, Queen, John, Henry, and Emmanuel. He is predeceased by siblings Gregory and Dunshang. In lieu of flowers, the family kindly requests donations be made to a local youth soccer or track and field club, a cause close to Tony's heart. Memorial services will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, March 16th, at Lifegate Church, 601 Southwest Thomas Street in Burleson, Texas. Live streaming will be available through the church website at lgburleson.online.church. Trina Gilmore Brady. Trina Gilmore Brady, 65, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, March 9th. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, March 16, 2024, at Nally Pickle & Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Trina was born on March 5, 1959, in Midland, to Matt and Lita Faye Gilmore. Trina was preceded in death by her daughter Claire and her parents Matt and Lena Faye. Trina survived by her husband Michael, son Brian, and her three grandchildren. Trina is also survived by her sister Peggy Buck. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations can be made to Cure SMA at www.curesma.org. Eileen Catherine McMains. Eileen Catherine McMains, 83, of Midland, passed away on January 20, 2024, at Midland Memorial Hospital in Midland, Texas. Eileen was born on July 22, 1940, to Mary Catherine Houts in Detroit, Michigan. A celebration of life will be held on March 15, 2024, 2 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Thursday, March 14th, 2024, Section A. Odessan accused of molesting 13-year-old. A 38-year-old Odessa man was booked into the Ector County Jail Wednesday on a felony warrant after a 13-year-old said he repeatedly molested her from July 2023 through last month. According to an Odessa Department report, the girl told a forensic examiner at the Midland Rape Crisis and Children's Advocacy Center on March 1st that Robert Jimenez cornered her in various areas of her home on multiple occasions and touched her inappropriately while sexually aroused and breathing uncontrollably. Jimenez later told medical staff he had, in fact, touched the girl inappropriately, the report stated. The name of the medical facility was redacted from the report. Jimenez was arrested on suspicion of indecency with a child, sexual contact, a second-degree felony. He was released from the jail after posting a $40,000 surety bond. Love beyond late bills. The Salvation Army of Midland Odessa is continuing its promotion of the National Love Beyond campaign. And in March, they are focusing on Love Beyond late bills. Millions of Americans face daily financial struggles and uphill battles to escape poverty. The Salvation Army in Midland Odessa works all year round to remove the constant burden of worry and stress, to provide hope and a way forward for those in need. One surprise expense, like an unexpected car repair or medical bill, can be the difference between affording rent, buying groceries, or paying monthly bills. We have people coming through our doors every day seeking basic financial assistance and asking if we are able to help them pay their overdue bills, Captain Robert Corriston with the Salvation Army of Midland Odessa said in a news release. Many individuals and families are coming to us for the first time, having never been in such dire financial need before. The last few years have been particularly difficult as layoffs and salary cuts have taken their toll, along with the increase in living expenses, all impacting family budgets. Howard was a resident at the Salvation Army shelter in Midland. After diligently working with his assigned caseworker, he secured a job and soon was able to move out of the shelter and into his own apartment. Howard was doing very well, but after several months of living independently, he became sick and was unable to work. With reduced income, it wasn't long before he was unable to pay his bills. He reached out to the Salvation Army for assistance, and they were able to help cover his outstanding bills until he was able to get back to work. "Without the help of the Salvation Army, I'd have been back living on the streets," said Howard. "I knew they would be there for me again when I needed the help, just like they have been before." When funds are available, the Salvation Army helps pay overdue bills, preventing homelessness and stabilizing housing for individuals and families who have fallen behind on their expenses and are at risk of losing their homes. They can help customers of TXU, Reliant, Ambit, Just Energy, Stream, Direct, and Atmos. It's much more than just paying the bills at the Salvation Army. "They really cared about me beyond just my immediate financial needs," said Howard. "Working with my case manager, I took a finance class, and that helped me realize what was most important, the things I did need and some things I could maybe do without. They didn't just stop after paying the bills. They were there, and I know they're still there if I need anything. Ongoing case management is an integral component of the Salvation Army's work with individuals and families in need. Clients work one-on-one with case managers, often connecting with local community partners to resolve complex issues and plan their way forward. Our work really does stretch well beyond the moment of crisis, said Coriston. Yes, we're there in the moment of crisis and greatest need, but we are also committed to love beyond the utility bills, rent, or whatever a family is facing to get them on a pathway to success and self-sufficiency. The Salvation Army is issuing a rallying cry for Americans to love beyond. The organization's message is simply that when we love beyond late bills, love beyond shelter, and love beyond disasters, we can provide hope and help for millions who need it. Love beyond is also a symbol of the resources and programs that so many people rely on year-round when they turn to the Salvation Army for assistance. In Midland, Odessa, the Salvation Army has already provided 4,484 nights of shelter, 12,078 meals, and $29,958 in financial assistance to individuals and families in 2024. The best way to ensure services continue for those in need is to visit www.salvationarmymidland.org or call 1-800-SALARMY, where you can make a donation or sign up for a sustaining gift of $25 per month, which could help a family overcome the risks of poverty and eviction. Learn more about Love Beyond by visiting the Salvation Army's website at www.salvationarmyusa.org/USN/video-hub/. For more information about how you can help, please contact Captain Robert Coriston at 432-683-3614. Midland preschoolers donate 450 books for National Reading Month. Preschoolers at Primrose School of Midland at Westridge donated 450 books to High Sky Children's Ranch to promote literacy in honor of National Reading Month. Og's Bountiful Book Drive at Primrose School encourages Primrose students to donate new or gently used books to benefit underserved children and families in communities across America. Named Og's Beautiful Book Drive, paying homage to Primrose friend Og the Bookworm, who represents caring and literacy by sharing his love for books, fosters giving without expectation, a key component of the Primrose School's balanced learning curriculum. Three local races heading for May 28th runoff. Three Ector County races are headed to a May runoff. Ector County Judge Justin Fawcett said following Tuesday's count of provisional ballots and the meeting of the ballot board, there were still two precinct chair slots tied. Ector County precinct chair races brought massive change to the local GOP, with Donna Kelm defeating longtime incumbent Tisha Crow, 4,954 to 3,775. Most of a group of newcomer candidates supporting Kelm also kicked out many of Crow's longtime supporters. Two of the precinct chair races ended in ties. In Precinct 205, Crow's candidate Dale Barnes got 142 votes, as did Kelm's supporter Charles Pierce. In Precinct 310, Crow's candidate Jaime Mendoza received 68 votes, as did Kelm's supporter Randy Elam. Fawcett via text said, June 17th is when Kelm and new precinct chairs will take office. The runoff is May 28th. These two races will be on the ballot along with a runoff for Justice of the Peace in Precinct 1 between Jennifer Mahan Woodall and incumbent Carlos Chavez. Mahan Woodall and Chavez are headed for a runoff May 28th. Chavez, a longtime lawman, was seeking a full term as Precinct 1 Justice of the Peace after being named to the post in April 2023 following J.P. Terry Lange's retirement. Lange is supporting Chavez. Chavez, 59, served with the Odessa Police Department for more than 30 years and touts his background in law enforcement and his ability to conduct business in Spanish as critical qualifications to residents in the sprawling precinct. Mahan Woodall is an office manager at Brown Oilfield Services. United Way of Odessa is accepting funding proposals. The United Way of Odessa is requesting proposals for 2024-25 community impact funding. Funding is open to nonprofit 501c3s serving in the United Way of Odessa service area who provide services in the areas of health, education, and self-sufficiency. To be considered for funding, funding proposals must be received by March 31st. To request an application or request further information, please contact 432-332-0941. UTPB students to present undergraduate research at National Conference by Alexandra Macia. Special from UTPB. Sophomore psychology major Madeline Moravchika, junior sociology major Harper Kellogg, and senior psychology major Luke Christensen are attending the National Conference on Undergraduate Research in April. This will be the first time students from UTPB will attend the National Conference in Long Beach, California. They will be presenting their research titled Psychological Factors, Social Factors, and Potential Barriers Related to the Non-Use of University Writing Services. The students are involved in the undergraduate research program at UTPB. They applied to the conference in December, and through the help of the Success Center and a few local businesses, they received enough funds to attend. The UTPB undergraduate research program has been indispensable in supporting us, including awarding us with $1,000 to conduct our research, said Christensen. We are proud to be part of this community and deeply grateful to everyone who has supported. Their mentors are Justin Volette and Rebecca Babcock. All three of the students were writing tutors in the Success Center. The project stems from seeing firsthand the reluctance students have towards tutoring. It means a lot to have the opportunity to present the research that we have been working on over the last 6 months, said Kellogg. This experience will also allow me to gain a lot of knowledge about this side of academic research. The students' research analyzes the psychological factors, social factors, and potential barriers involved in the use of writing center services on campus. They are collecting undergraduate survey data about writing behavior and the use of writing tutoring services or lack thereof. The students are also hosting focus groups to better understand students' experience in hopes of understanding why students don't attend tutoring sessions. The project began in May of 2023. It was officially accepted into the undergraduate research department in September after the group furthered their research plan at the Naylor Workshop in York, Pennsylvania. This opportunity will help further my career as a counselor and psychologist, said Moravchika. I am only a sophomore, and I have never dreamed I would be attending a conference during my second year of college. All three students say they are grateful for their mentors who encourage them to advance their research while helping them every step of the way. They have helped me realize that research will be a part of my story for much longer than my time as an undergraduate, said Christensen. They have taught me to be curious and seek answers, even when those answers are not easy to find. The students have worked hard on the project and say they are excited to represent the university on a much larger scale. Christensen said the conference will be a celebration of the work it took to get there. Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, March 14th, 2024. Entertainment. Three things to do in Midland, March 14th through 19th. From a Midland obstacle course to the annual Permian Basin Comic Con X to an adults age 55 plus pickleball tournament, here's a list of three things to do in Midland. By B.K. Richter. Midland Obstacle Course Day. The Midland Fire and Police Departments will be hosting an obstacle course day Friday, March 15th. The event is slated to begin at 9 a.m. until 3 p.m. and will be located at Centennial Park in Midland, 200 West Wall. Donuts, hot coffee, hot chocolate, and games will be served to guests beginning at 9 a.m., while the obstacle course part of the program will begin at 1 p.m. Permian Basin Comic Con X. The Permian Basin Comic Con returns for the ninth year of operation at the Midland County Horseshoe Arena from March 15th through 17th. Guests such as Holly Marie Combs, Dante Basco, Francois Petit, Carrie Walgren, Taryn Manning, David Matranga, Aaron Zeck, Lindsay Jones, Kara Eberly, Jill Harris, Dallas Reed, Leah Clark, Emily Neves, and Sarah Roach will be in attendance. General admission tickets range from $20 to $35. VIP tickets are $125. Children under the age of 8 years old are free to attend. To view the full schedule of events and to access ticket information, please go to their website at https://pbcomicconx.com/. YMCA Pickleball Tournament. The YMCA of Midland, 800 North Big Spring, plans to host an adults over the age of 55 pickleball tournament Tuesday, March 19th. The tournament will start at 12 p.m. until 3 p.m. For more information, visit https://midlandymca.org/.
Nimitz Honor Band selected for Music for All Festival. The Nimitz Middle School Honor Band has been selected to perform at the 2024 Music for All National Festival presented by Yamaha in Indianapolis, March the 21st through the 23rd. The Nimitz Middle School Honor Band, under the direction of Jordan Freeman, Taryn McMillan, and Channing Freeman, were selected following a rigorous application and audition process. The Music for All National Festival will feature high school and middle school ensembles from across the country, considered the nation's premier non-competitive festival for scholastic instrumental music ensembles. Student musicians perform at top venues, receiving evaluation and feedback from a panel of renowned conductors and clinicians, and participate in educational workshops. Invited ensembles include high school and middle school concert bands, orchestras, percussion ensembles, and chamber ensembles, all who have achieved the highest level of scholastic excellence. The Nimitz Honor Band will be performing a send-off concert at 7 p.m. March 17th at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Additionally, 60 members of the Permian High School Varsity Choir have been selected to showcase their exceptional talent at the prestigious Carnegie Hall in New York City. The performance is scheduled to take place on Sunday, March the 17th, as part of the New England Symphonic Ensemble concert. It promises to be an unforgettable event, showcasing the finest musical talents from across the nation and delivering an afternoon of captivating melodies and harmonies. The choir will be leaving early on March the 14th and returns on March 18th. While in New York, students will visit landmarks and attractions as well as attend Broadway musicals. Updates from the trip can be seen on the Permian Choir Facebook page. Odessa Bar sued over alcohol-related crash. An Odessa bar is being sued by the parents of a 19-year-old man who was killed last September in an alcohol-related crash that also killed a 30-year-old woman. According to the lawsuit filed March 6th in Ector County District Court, Nicole Marie Stockdale was intoxicated when her Ford Fusion struck Eric Aristo Garcia's Cadillac head-on in the northbound lanes of North Faudray Road on September the 7th, 2023. Garcia suffered blunt force injuries and carbon monoxide poisoning, and his body was burned beyond recognition, the lawsuit stated. Herbert and Blanca Garcia's lawyers allege Stockdale was overserved at Drink at the Spur, 6901 Crosby Road in Odessa, despite being obviously intoxicated. The Garcias are seeking more than $1 million in damages because he and his lawyers believe Drink at the Spur violated the state's Dram Shop Act by contributing to Nicole Marie Stockdale's state of intoxication by overserving her. The Garcias, through the Silva Law Group in Odessa and the Mathis Law Firm in San Angelo, are seeking damages for future loss of love, companionship, comfort and society, pain and mental anguish, funeral costs, court costs, and physical pain and suffering. Obituaries. Edna Anderson, age 80, of Odessa, peacefully passed away on March the 2nd at the Siena Nursing and Rehabilitation in Odessa. A celebration of life service will be held on Saturday, March the 16th, at American Heritage Funeral Home at 11 a.m. Billy and Rick Farmer. Billy Farmer, age 73, joined her husband Rick Farmer, 75, in heaven on February the 17th. The family invites you to join them in celebrating Billy and Rick's life Saturday, March the 23rd, at the venue at Latana Acres, 6300 North Golder, in Odessa at 2 p.m. Glendon Nolan, age 95, suffered from a chronic illness, but he passed peacefully at his home on March the 7th. A visitation for Glendon will be held Thursday, March the 14th, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home, 601 North Allegheny Avenue in Odessa. A rosary will occur Thursday, March the 14th at 6 p.m., 601 North Allegheny Avenue in Odessa. A funeral mass will occur Friday, March the 15th at 10 a.m. at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Church, 7601 North Grandview Avenue in Odessa. And Glendon will be laid to rest in St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Church, 7601 North Grandview Avenue in Odessa. Diane O'Leary, age 95, went to be with her Lord on March the 3rd. She will be buried at Fort Sam Houston in San Angelo. Tina Marie Arnold, age 52, of Odessa, died Wednesday, March 6th in Andrews. Memorial service will be held at 3 p.m. March 17th at Sid and Sam's Steakhouse. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Acres West Funeral Chapel. Linda K. Davis, age 75, of Odessa, died Saturday, March the 9th. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. March 14th at West Texas Cowboy Church. Ruth Ann Harmon, age 70, of Odessa, died Wednesday, March the 6th. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. March the 13th at the Bible Baptist Church in Odessa, borough immediately following in American Heritage Cemetery. Wilma Ruth Thatcher, age 91, of Odessa, died Thursday, March the 7th. No services have been scheduled, but arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Alton Willis of Lubbock, age 80, died Monday, March the 11th. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. March the 14th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.